And good evening. This is Intuitive Soul Radio with the second portion of this evening, which is the author portion. And we have Den Benor, which is the author of 7 Minutes to Natural Pain Release. Pain is a choice and suffering is optional. So I look forward to this interview. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you very much, Laurie. I'm pleased to be with you.
So you, it's very ironic because I actually just had an interview yesterday on EFT for a full hour. And there are some similarities, but you have created your own. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the basics of WE?
Well, WE was born out of my horrible frustration as a psychiatrist, having trained when psychiatry was all psychotherapy. Over the years, psychiatry became less and less psychotherapy, with more and more medications being required. At the same time, the time frame was shortened from 1 or 2 hours a week paid by insurance in the United States where I was practicing down to 15 to 30 minutes once a month.
Wow.
So I needed something brief and potent that I could do within that limited time frame on top of doing medication prescriptions.
Hmm.
And the first thing that I found was EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's a right and left stimulation of the body. And a person focuses on the issue they're wanting to release while tapping on the right and left side of the body or moving their eyes right and left. They get very quick, very deep releases, but at the same time, they're very intense. So it's recommended that EMDR should be practiced only in the therapist's office.
Hmm.
And in fact, the first series of sessions includes a whole hour on how to handle stress, how to handle panic or overwhelming feelings if they should come loose at home, even without practicing the EMDR, once the EMDR has been started in the office. Well, this worked fine for me in my office. It worked fine for me, for myself, but I couldn't send clients home to do it. So the overall benefit was very limited. And then I was really pleased to find EFT, Emotional Freedom Techniques, which involves a long series of acupressure points on the face, on the chest, on the hand, and produces the same results, except that it's not unsafe to use at home.
Right.
Because the releases are not very heavy. They're not overwhelming. The difficulty I found, though, because I tended to get people coming to me who had more severe problems, expecting medications in most cases. These were people with panic disorders, PTSD, and the trouble I found was when they most needed to use it at home, they were in such stress or panic, they couldn't remember the procedure. I was also working with children. If the child had ADHD, their attention would wander while they were supposed to be doing this long series of tapping, and they'd get frustrated and refuse to do it. Children were also ashamed or shy to do it in front of their classmates because they sometimes encountered teasing or bullying over that. So again, I was frustrated because I had something that worked wonderfully well in the office. This worked wonderfully well at home when people would practice it, but many people felt it just didn't work for them. And I was actually in Toronto visiting from the States at an energy psychology conference. I was moaning to a colleague how I was so frustrated with this because it was so good and yet I couldn't use it with my clients. And she looked at me and she tapped her eyebrows on the right and the left back and forth, saying to me, "You don't need all that long series of acupressure points. You can just use these too." But as she was doing that back and forth on her eyebrows right and left, I said to myself, "That's EMDR. That's not EFT." And that's how we was born. We is the hybrid derived from EMDR and EFT.
Hmm. And what does it stand for?
Say an affirmation.
Okay.
And they tap on the right and left side of the body. It could be on the eyebrows. It could be on the arms. It could be on their knees as they're sitting down. While they recite the affirmation, that appears to be a calming influence, because when people do this, they don't get the heavy emotional releases that we saw with EMDR. So it's safe to use at home.
Right. And what does WE stand for?
WE stands for the holistic, spelled with W, hybrid, derived from EMDR and EFT, and that's for techies. And for normal people, it stands for whole health, easily and effectively.
Nice. Okay. So let us like really delve into this. I mean, we'll do an example, because, you know, I've been telling my hip that, you know, the pain is going to be gone as of today. Well, at least reasonably reduced, and because we're going to go through the process and we're going to try and work on whatever it is that's been being stuck in my hip. But you've come up with some ways for people to, you know, measure their pain, and you've come up with, you know, a lot of different, you really know this, because you're coming obviously from a background of psychology and psychiatry. And so, you know, understand what pain is and the physiological and the physical and, you know, how we create pain. And so I really want to talk about that, because that's really important for people to understand that, you know, this isn't just, you know, magic, something that's going to happen that's going to change their pain. It's because we're actually creating the pain. And that there's something that's going on that we need to understand about ourselves so that we can release it.
You've summarized that very nicely, Lois. In all of my training in psychology and medicine, I spent 4 years in medical school and then on into psychiatry. My whole orientation was in eliminating pain. Certainly with medications, we use pain killers, which, from my experience over the past 8 years, is directly opposite to what I think we should be doing. I find that when people develop a pain, usually the body is wanting to tell us something about our lives. So the first step in helping a person is to ask them, what might this pain be wanting you to know about your life? So for instance, a person might have a backache, and their pain might tell them, you're carrying too heavy a load, which might be a physical load for someone who's doing heavy labor, or it might be a metaphoric load, because we say we're carrying a heavy load of responsibility or of debt. Many people are really stressed out over their debts today.
Yes.
Or we're carrying a burden of responsibility for other people in our family. So, excuse me. Once we start the dialogue, Once we start the dialogue with the pain almost always will decrease immediately. I've been really surprised at that, and very much more so the people who come to me who haven't experienced that before, because they are expecting something to be done to them for their pain. And what I'm doing is I'm teaching people how to deal with the pain themselves. So after they get over their surprise that I'm not going to take it away for them, after they get over their skepticism when I ask them to talk with their pain, and 9 out of 10 people very quickly get some sort of answer to that question, I then ask them, okay, now, your pain has come down a little bit since it doesn't have to yell at you anymore. You're listening to it. What could you promise your pain that you're going to do differently in your life? that's related to what the pain is complaining about. Well, people very quickly, generally, will come up with several things they ought to be doing or should be doing. And if the pain believes that they actually will do it, then the pain lessens even more because it has less reason to be yelling at them. But if the pain doesn't believe they're actually going to do it, the pain remains the same. So
that's
then we do a little negotiation. I sort of represent the pain, and I ask the people, well, how could you convince me or your pain that you're really going to do this? So when they make a commitment that the pain believes they're going to keep, it then will decrease even further. I've had some amazing responses. I had a woman with 20-year history of pain in her knee. She was at a conference and volunteered to let me demonstrate with her. 1 year earlier, she had had a knee replacement because the pain was so bad, and they did find degeneration in the cartilage. But the surgery made the pain worse instead of better. Well, in 20 minutes of dialoguing with her pain, she found herself completely free of pain for the first time in 20 years. And I was almost as surprised as she was. Well, I shouldn't be. After 8 years of doing this and 7 years of giving a money-back guarantee, where only two people have claimed it in all that time, I should have more confidence. And then, if there's still pain left, if it hasn't gone all the way down to zero, I ask people, can you check with your inner self whether you're ready right now to release all of this pain? Because sometimes a person might be so used to having the pain, or they might have found the pain really a friend and a helper in some ways, because with a pain, one doesn't have to do certain things. One might not have to work as hard in their line of employment, or one might be able to ask the family to help a little bit more if one is shy to ask for help, or if others aren't particularly forthcoming with offers of help. And the other side of it is that sometimes the family members get used to being kind and helpful and supportive, and they really enjoy being helpers to the person with pain. So other members in the family might not be comfortable if the person very quickly lets go of all the pain, because then they lose a way of being close with each other, of sharing their caring. So a person may have several reasons to hold on to some of the pain, which we respect. We don't push them to let go. We just encourage them over the next few weeks or so to explore whether they could find other ways to do what the pain was doing for them. And in a nutshell, that's how we work.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about pain. How do we understand, that's brilliant about, often we get a reinforcement, whether it's negative or positive, we accept whatever reinforcement we get to hold on to things. And certainly that is, a large case of what happens often is, because of our childhood, the way we've been brought up, often if we weren't rewarded as well for being the good girl or the good boy, we were rewarded most often, by reacting and by, acting out. And even though that was usually a negative reinforcement, it was still some sort of attention. And that, so we grew to want that type of attention. And so that's why we hold on to a lot of things, because we still get energy from it and it's attention. And whether it's negative or positive, it doesn't really matter. It still feels good because we're getting that energy.
You're again spot on, Lori. When we have a pain, we often just find that life is easier for us in some way, or it's better for us in some way. So unconsciously, we decide, well, maybe it's worth keeping this pain or even increasing this pain a bit. Often, I'll ask people, if the pain isn't going away, what are 6 good reasons for holding on to this? Most people will give a little chuckle because they can pretty quickly recognize that the pain is helping them. It is their friend in some situations and in some ways. So even though they'd rather not have the suffering of the pain, they do allow themselves to continue with the pain in order to have the benefits of it.
Right. So there's a lot of psychological factors involved in pain. You want to talk about some of those?
Well, the enormous complexity of the human condition makes it a challenge for many people to figure out what their pain is wanting to tell them. The we system is just absolutely perfect, I've discovered, with the help of so many people who've come to me to have their pains released. They've been my teachers in this. When a person is having really good results with the we, they're tapping and the pain is decreasing, but then it stops going down.
Mm.
I ask them, what might the pain be saying? And we deal with that, but the pain still doesn't want to go away. So then we go deeper yet, looking at some of the limiting beliefs that might be behind their holding on to the pain. For instance, a person might not believe that they deserve to be loved. They might not believe that anyone will respond to them if they ask, unless they're just really on their way, you know, to bed with a pain, because that was their experience growing up. Or that was their experience in school or in other situations where they learned and they programmed themselves to be susceptible to having pain. So then we work on these issues of, I don't believe I deserve, or some people are even punishing themselves because they feel guilty over something. Whatever it is, we can work on those issues, whereupon there's no longer a lock that's holding the pain back from releasing, and the pain will decrease.
Right. So like EFT, this works on limiting beliefs as well, so that we come up with then an affirmation that would allow us to release the belief.
Yes.
Okay.
In addition, though, we borrows from EMDR the second half of the approach, which is installing positives to replace negatives that have been released.
Mm-hmm.
Many EFT practitioners are perfectly happy, as are their clients, to just be relieved of whatever they've let go of. But with we install a positive. So let's say I'm dealing with fear of heights. I might get down to a zero. Then I would want to install a belief that I'm okay with heights.
Mm.
So I would say I can look down from any height and feel comfortable. I, you know, start out a little bit skeptical because that hasn't been my experience. So I ask myself, what is the number between 0 and 10 for how strongly I believe that I could look down from a height and be comfortable? It might even be as low as a 1 or a 2, because I've never experienced that. So then I repeat my positive statement, and then I repeat what I call the counteracting affirmation that we use with the negative issue. And the positive increases and gets stronger, moving in a positive direction, just like the negative got weaker, which is moving in a positive direction.
Right.
Hmm. I think, you know, people would actually understand better if we demonstrate.
Okay, well, let's do that then. Because I've been coming up with things as you've been talking as to, you know, what is this pain in my hip? You know, it's been around since May, and prior to that, it'd come for a little while as well, a few years before. And, you know, when I go into my pain and ask you what it is, and, you know, a lot of has come up in the last 2 to 3 months specifically, because I'm going through a kind of grieving period and a releasing period and, you know, doing a lot of healing. So what I do know is that the pain somehow, it has a very stuck feeling. And I realized quite recently, actually, that I sort of more than sabotaged, I sacrificed, you know, my own livelihood to help someone else. And around that time, it was starting to change again, and things were where they didn't need my help, so I wasn't, you know, I wasn't in the caregiving mode, and so then I had to, you know, step back again and start really focusing back on me and getting myself back together. But there was just this real, it just feels very stuck. And there's, when we talked, you were asking, something came up, and there's a lot of sadness there.
How strong is the pain right now?
You know, I really generally only feel it in the mornings when I wake up. And it seems that I do something in my sleep that sort of triggers it. But so that's when I feel it the most. Right now, it's, you know, it's not very high. But if I were to, even putting my focus on, it's not in this position, sitting, standing, that I notice it. It's really when I'm, you know, lying in bed. But I do know that it's there.
So what level, you know, can you identify at the very moment?
Maybe a 2.
Okay.
That's low, right?
Yeah, that's low.
Yeah.
Now, can you remember this morning when you got up, was it stronger?
Yeah, a lot stronger. It was, in fact, a lot stronger all night. It was probably an 8 or a 9.
Okay. So if you think back on it, can you really connect with that 8 or 9 intensity in your memory?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. Let's use the 8 or 9 in your memory, because that gives you a deeper connection with the pain. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so you've connected with some of the reasons that may be there. Can you ask the pain, what would it like you to do differently in your life?
Well, there's an aspect of surrender and letting go. There's an aspect of focusing on me, which I have been doing, certainly, and healing.
So I hear 3 things: surrender,
mm-hmm.
letting go, focus on me, and healing.
Right.
Can you look at the memory of the pain? Does it feel any different in your memory?
Yeah, it does, actually.
What do you notice?
It feels there's less of an edge. It's like almost a breath.
So what number would you give it at this moment when you look in your memory?
Maybe about a 5.
Well done. This says that you're sensitive. Many people will find that they started an 8 or a 9, and it may be more intense, you know, and present if they're feeling it right at the moment. And then they talk with the pain, or they negotiate with the pain, but it only goes down 1 or 2 numbers at a time. To go from an 8 or a 9 to a 5 says that you're sensitive, and that's the good news.
Right.
The bad news is that you're sensitive. So you could be prone to having the pain easily, to being stressed, you know, to feeling that it's hard for you to focus on you if there's someone around who needs help too.
Mm-hmm.
So what could you promise your pain that you'll do differently?
you know, I feel. So, you know, the sadness is coming up a lot. And there's something about, you know, honoring that, I guess, honoring where I'm at and not, you know, trying to avoid, I guess, me, like honoring where I'm at and not, not just trying to help everybody else.
Really good. Okay. So what did you promise your pain about that? What are you going to definitely do differently?
Oh, I guess, you know, focus more in the now, focus more on, you know, breathing and bringing myself back into center, and through that, you know, honoring whatever it is that I am feeling so that it's not, you know, pushed aside for someone else.
That really sounds a good idea. Intention. How does the pain feel in your memory at this moment?
It's a little skeptical.
Right. What number is it?
Yeah, it's climbing up. It's gone to 6.
Okay. So you may have said this before, eh?
Maybe.
Maybe not just once.
No, maybe.
So how about if we just do a little work on the grieving part of it that you feel is connected to this?
Okay.
And you don't have to share what the grieving is about if you're not comfortable sharing. All I would ask you is to tell me, what is the intensity of your grieving feeling at this moment?
Yeah, it's funny. I thought, you know, I have dealt with a lot of it. And, you know, certainly my background has, abandonment has sort of been my story. So last summer, I dealt with a lot of grieving. And this year, I sort of finally honored some of that abandonment and the death of my father and, you know, the abandoning when I was an infant and, you know, all that seemed to have, so that this time it was a lot easier. However, I can still feel that there is some grief in the breakup of a relationship.
How strong is it at this moment?
I want to say between a 4 and a 6.
Okay. So, is there any physical sensation other than the left hip pain associated with the grieving?
Yeah, there's a lot of in my throat. It feels like it's just kind of tightening up.
Right. Anything else?
A lot of it's in my throat. It feels almost like there's pressure, like, like there's pressure.
And what do you think the tightness in your throat might be saying?
It's unexpressed,
right?
Emotions, unexpressed sadness.
And so, are you on a handheld or a hand-free phone?
Oh, we're definitely hand-free. We're on a microphone right now, so.
Okay. So if you would cross your arms and start patting each bicep muscle, each arm, with the opposite hand, okay? Mm-hmm. Right and left, back and forth.
Oh, right and left? Yeah. Like not at the same time, just at separate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Alternating.
Okay.
Right, left, you know.
Yep.
Just keep on doing that. And just repeat after me. Even though I feel.
Even though I feel.
And name the feeling.
Sad. Grieving.
When I think about.
When I think about.
And name the.
The breakup. Name my relationship.
Right. And in the same file drawer, you have the residues, whatever they may be, of being abandoned as an infant.
Yep.
The death of your father.
Right.
Anything else?
No, I think, I went from to a foster home, then I was taken out at 5.5 months, and then went to my birth parents, and my dad died at 13, and it's kind of been from then on, sort of, and I even abandoned myself, I believe, until about the age of 2, because I have a very clear memory of coming back into myself. So I didn't want to deal with all of the stuff.
And then, as you're still tapping, right?
Mm-hmm.
You add, and I still love and accept myself.
And I still love and accept myself.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And you take a nice deep breath. And then you relax and pause with a tapping, hold off tapping, and ask yourself, what number is the grieving now?
It still seems like, it still seems about a 4.
Okay, but it's not between a 4 and a 6.
No.
Okay. So again, tapping.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I feel.
Even though I feel.
Name the feeling.
Sadness and grief.
When I think about.
When I think about. Breakup of my relationship, my abandonment of myself, my death of my father.
Abandoning myself for a bit when I was a baby.
Abandoning myself for a bit when I was a baby.
I feel some tightness in my throat.
I feel some tightness in my throat.
And I still love and accept myself.
And I still love and accept myself.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
Would you feel comfortable adding, and God loves and accepts me?
And God loves and accepts me.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And unconditionally.
And unconditionally.
And a nice deep breath. And then as you release the breath, you pause with the tapping and ask, what number is it? The grieving?
About a 3.
Good. Now, did you notice any difference when you added, and God loves and accepts me?
Yeah, there was a lightening and almost a smile.
Many people experience that. I'm not pushing a belief in God necessarily. I'm just asking, and most people find it comfortable to say that, although some people would prefer to say, I'm one with nature, I'm one with the universe, Christ loves and accepts me, or whatever is convenient and comfortable to them, they can use as their positive. On the other side, as people do this, they find, as you noted, that there can be a lightening when they connect with their awareness, their participation in the transcendent, in something greater than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So this becomes a way for people to connect with their higher self.
Right. Which, yeah, is it very interesting.
And let's just put the grief on the side for a moment and ask, how strong is the memory of the pain at this point?
Yeah, it's going down 2. It's about a 3 as well.
From a 6 to a 3 or a 4. That's really good. So again, in that area, you're showing your sensitivity again. How about the pain in the present in your hip right now?
Yeah, I don't feel anything at all.
So it went from a 2 to a 0.
Right.
So I'd say, Lori, you're giving a really good demonstration how we can be helpful.
Right.
And if you want, we could continue this after the interview, because I don't want to leave you like halfway there. But for the audience, it might be good if we continue the discussion.
Absolutely. Yeah. Getting back to the affirmation, how would we fill in an affirmation that was positive?
So there's a challenge. And I'll turn the question right around to you and say, what lessons have you had from this, or what positive experiences have come to you through having suffered this pain?
Well, it certainly brings my awareness, because I've sort of, on this journey, I've made a very strong attempt that any time I'm feeling anything other than, you know, peace and love, that I sort of very much examine what I'm going through. So when I do experience things like this, it makes me, you know, very conscious and aware. When I'm in pain, it makes me, you know, get into my body more. It gives me an excuse, I think, to not move forward necessarily, because it makes me feel like, well, here I am, a victim again, sort of thing, to outside interference. But this is supposed to be positive. Let's see. I think, you know, bringing my awareness into, you know, what is going on is probably the most important aspect of it, or the most...
Yes. So you've become wiser from this.
Right. Stronger.
You've learned numbers of different ways of approaching it.
Right.
And yet there's some part of you that would still say, well, this could be a convenience excuse not to move forward. I could still hold on to my victim image of myself.
Right.
So you have actually a mixture here of genuine, you know, total positive, and positives that are somewhere in the direction of, well, maybe here's a bit of a reason to still hold on to it.
Right.
So we might want to separate out those two and invite you to work on your feeling that you need an excuse not to move forward, or what is the hesitation about moving forward? That would be a separate issue to work on. The victim feeling that you've probably carried from way early in life,
mm-hmm,
might also be a good one to work on and let go of. At the same time, just looking at what you've done, where you've moved your pain so nicely in the present down to zero, we might just go ahead and put in and strengthen the positive,
right,
about increased awareness, greater connection with your body, you know, those sorts of positives in your life.
Right.
So how strong are those? You know, you're feeling that the pain has brought you the gift of increased awareness.
Pretty strong, about a 7.
Okay. Shall we go for a 10?
Yes.
Okay. So how would you phrase it? I feel my pain has helped me by...
Oh, okay. I feel my pain has helped me by increasing my awareness... Increasing my awareness through connecting with my body.
Good. And then you add, oh, are you tapping?
Oh, no.
Okay, let's have you do it again, tapping.
I feel my pain has helped me by increasing my awareness through connecting with my body.
And I love and accept myself.
And I love and accept myself.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And a nice deep breath. And as you release the breath, you pause with the tapping. And how strong is it now?
I'd say a 9, maybe.
Great. So again, we've demonstrated very clearly how we can work both to decrease the negative and here to increase the positive. And again, we could continue with this after this.
Right. Interview. Right. So, okay. So understanding what we've done then, we've taken something that's physical that probably resulted from a response to stress or a response to the grieving or a response to, you know, understanding that a role had sort of changed. And then we, you know, it comes into a physical pain. And then we look at, you know, some of the beliefs that we hold. Now, there's a lot of different ways that we can obviously do this. And there's a lot of different things that, you know, people do, and you talk about it with regards to adapting to the pain, because we sort of deny certain aspects, and we, you know, we deny our suffering and our anger and our guilt, and, you know, so we push this stuff away. So being that I'm more aware, what is it is quick and easy for people who, you know, are in avoidance or are have adapted to the pain?
Not following the question.
Sorry. Well, you talk about how after a certain period of time, we sort of adapt to the pain and we sort of are denying some of our suffering and the underlying aspects of why the pain sort of came about. Do you want to talk a little bit about how we do that?
Many times, the pain is connected to memories that are so uncomfortable that we'd rather not look at them or not feel the feelings attached to them. And my understanding is that as children, it's really helpful for us to bury these sorts of memories. The negative feelings for a child might just be so difficult to suffer, and the child has no other choice but to suffer because they can't leave, they can't change the situation. If their parents are involved or if their parents are unaware of or indifferent to their suffering, they can't change their parents, they can't turn their parents in for new parents, they're just stuck. So it's easier and better for a child to bury it from their consciousness. My understanding of how we do that is that we bury it somewhere in our right brain hemisphere, where we're less conscious of things in general, and where we can shut off our awareness completely if we are really suffering. The right brain then turns to the left brain and says, "You don't want to know." And the left brain, the conscious brain, says, "Nah, I'd rather not know." So we go ahead in life pretending that we don't know, that it's there. And yet it is there and it festers, because when we bury it, the feelings are often there in full strength. We find this with people who've had post-traumatic stress, where they've been horribly abused or where they happen to witness terrible things like an auto accident or someone in the family dying in front of them or someone being hurt or abused, you know, not themselves, but they hurt for the other person or they were scared. So burying it was really helpful as a child. But then as we grow up, we have many more options. So our unconscious mind says, "Oh, come on, can't we let go of some of this? the way the unconscious does this is by giving us dreams about it, or by responding to a situation in our current life that is sort of similar, that's going to sit in the same file drawer. So your unconscious would have taken the distress over your breakup of the relationship earlier this year, and it would have put it in the same file drawer with the memories of other distresses of the same sort. So when we go in there to that file drawer and start taking out and releasing and letting go of that part that we're aware of in the present, the unconscious can catch a ride with the old stuff too. So it can encourage us to clear out the file drawer completely, not just clearing out what we have in the present.
Right. And I mean, we tend to have a lot of traumas that we sort of force and deny and get rid of so that we don't have to deal with it. But typically what happens is, you know, something like either pain, or we become depressed, or but there are other ways that this comes up and comes through us. And I think a lot of times, you know, especially now, the fears with regards to financial fear that's being put out there, and I think we're dealing with a lot of different areas in our lives. And I'm assuming that pain is a funny thing, because there's either a physical pain or there's an emotional pain, and a lot of times we're not really knowing. You know, our body wants to give us signals, and sometimes it can be a migraine, and sometimes it can, well, there's multitude of ways that a physical pain can manifest, and there's multitude of ways that psychological pain sort of manifests.
And oftentimes, Lori, they're very closely tied together, because we get uptight in our body when we're in pain or in stress. So that part of the body that's uptight may be just connected by association, just by chance association, that we happen to have a tightness in that hip, or in the jaw, or in the neck, or the back, at the same time that we had the emotional distress. So the two become linked together.
Right. So
then we can work on either the pain, or on the memory, or both of them better, in order to release the whole complex of the feeling and the physical memory.
Right. And you talk about how, you know, the physical pain, or really any pain, is really part of our wake-up call from our unconscious to sort of deal with something that we're not dealing with.
Real alarm bell. and oftentimes the unconscious mind will seek other ways first. We'll have dreams or nightmares, or we might repeat the same kind of relationship again and again, because we're somehow unconsciously drawn to those sorts of people who are going to help us to let go. But if we don't get it, if we don't wake up to what we're doing, the body will continue to yell louder through pain, and the unconscious will get our attention that way, because we weren't paying attention in other ways.
Hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about spiritual bypass and the spiritual influence? Yes.
In our society, we've had a terrible time with spirituality in Western society, because science has claimed that spirituality cannot be proved. You can't measure it. You can't weigh it. You can't put a tape measure around it. You can't say, what color does it have? Or, you know, there are no physical ways of validating it. Therefore, science says it doesn't exist. Well, I've been on that side of the belief for numbers of years. Mm-hmm. When I was through with my training in psychology and medicine and psychiatry, I just thought all this stuff was nonsense. I thought that people held on to a belief in God because they wanted a father figure in their life, or because they were afraid of death. And so a religious belief gave them hope that maybe physical end of life doesn't mean total end of existence. So it took me a while before I was able to listen to all the people who kept telling me that spiritual beliefs, spiritual practices, spiritual community was a really helpful thing in their life, a healing aspect of their life. I also started developing my own healing gifts, as in Reiki-type gifts or therapeutic touch, and also through meditation and prayer. I also talked with a lot of people who would tell me that they'd seen their relatives who had passed on, or they'd heard them after they were physically no longer there. At first, the psychiatrist in me was a little bit perturbed at that, but having heard it so many times, and then coming upon research showing that 2 out of 3 people have this experience, and then being curious and reading further and finding that there's wonderful research on near-death and out-of-body experiences, on channeled messages. People who are sensitive can communicate with the spirit of the person who has passed on, and they can become sort of a telephone between the person who's still alive physically and the person who's alive in spirit, oftentimes helping them to resolve unresolved feelings or relationship issues, so that both sides of the communication end up relieved for having had the communication. I've also found research confirming a reasonable belief in reincarnation. So my whole perspective on the spiritual has shifted. Furthermore, I find that with we, as I introduce the possibility of including a spiritual component, I find that people very quickly connect with and validate for themselves that the transcendent does have the ability to give them more healing, more peace in their lives.
Well, I want to mention a little bit about, you know, how we come into acceptance and love and compassion, you know, as we close down this interview, so that, you know, people, how do we use we, I guess that would be the positive aspects and affirmations that we use to bring us into that place of forgiveness and compassion and love and transcendence.
Yes, exactly. So the affirmations, where we tweak them, we change them incrementally just a little bit at a time, can give us the opportunity to check out, does this have a power in my life to bring me more healing, more peace?
Mm-hmm. How does the collective consciousness work around, you know, where we're going?
You're asking one of my favorite questions, Lori. I treat a lot of people, I help a lot of people who have post-traumatic stress disorders, where they have anger outbursts, they have flashbacks to what happened, they have difficulty sleeping at night. Their lives can really be pretty miserable. They also may become abusive to other people after having been abused themselves. They may also become suicidal. We see this in the troops coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. There are now more suicides happening in the veterans than their hard deaths on the battlefield because of this PTSD. I started thinking that humanity as a whole seems to have a PTSD, a post-traumatic stress disorder, because we have suffered for thousands of years killing each other, being abusive towards each other, losing people close to us, dying unhappy deaths, so that in the collective consciousness, we have all these memories which lead us as a human race to be abusive again towards each other and to be suicidal. We are destroying our planet right under our feet, literally. So you and I may not survive because we may be toast. And we're not doing enough about it to stop that. So I'm hoping that, first of all, as each of us clears our distress ourselves, we'll be contributing less of that to the collective consciousness. But also, with each clearing that we do using we or any other healing, we could invite other people through the collective consciousness to release as well. So it's like we're opening a doorway for ourselves to release, and that could be a doorway that other people resonate with and use to clear for themselves. So when I'm doing we for myself or with others, I'll often invite them to say with me, I invite anyone and everyone, anywhere and everywhere, any when and every when, who is ready to clear with me to do so. Hopefully, creating a wave of clearing through the collective consciousness so that it goes deeper.
Wow. That's very beautiful and very selfless. Very nice.
It also helps to put meaning to my suffering. And I share in my book, 7 Minutes to Natural Pain Release, that, I'm not here telling others, you know, here's how you do it. I've been using this myself for a lot of pain and grief that I had over difficulties in my childhood. I also share the responses of other people to we, how it's helped them, so that people can get a really good idea of ways that they could benefit themselves from this. And may I mention my website?
Yeah, absolutely.
The book is available at www.paintap.com, where I've also included a full description of how to do this and many articles and appreciations from people who tell how it's been helpful. Maybe I can close or approach the closing here with just one of those items that I received only a few days ago.
Sure.
A woman who teaches children to cure their physical disabilities like cerebral palsy had a 6-year-old whom she taught we because the boy was stressed. And he went home and he taught his mother, who taught another friend, who taught a third person who was a writer doing a book on stress that she was finding distressing to herself. So she was getting secondary stress, the writer, from talking to a person who was telling about their stress. And so it just shows how easy it is to learn and to teach this to one another. I'm hoping that there'll be schools teaching this soon.
Nice.
So that children don't have to carry all that garbage through the rest of their life that we accumulate as kids.
Absolutely, and it's a lovely vision that I believe could definitely help change the collective consciousness. So it's really wonderful, and I'm honored that we were able to talk today and do some work and get people to understand what it's all about, and I hope that this was very helpful for our listeners.
And thank you very much, Lori, for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope to have you back, actually.
I'd be pleased.
Great. All right, so that's it for this portion of the evening, and there is an interview right after this. Thank you.